aren't me making silly faces? Here, I'm tucked away in one of the many extra guest rooms, all of which are decorated so as to keep you from overstaying your welcome. I now sleep on an antique-style daybed, the sort of thing fit for a 1950s pin-up girl to show off her garters, and not so much meant for, you know, actual sleeping. The ensuite bathroom is equipped with monogrammed Tuscan soaps that look too expensive to touch, much less use. And the walls are decorated with the kind of abstract art that looks like the handiwork of a third grader. My only addition to the room, besides Bessie, my childhood stuffed cow, is a tiny photo of my mother and me from when I was about 8 or 9. My entire body is wrapped around her thigh, like I'm a baby monkey, even though I was already too old for that sort of thing. She's looking down at me. There's love and amusement in her eyes, adoration and fear in mine. I still remember the moment it was taken. I was afraid of a new babysitter, convinced for some reason that if my mom walked out the door, she'd never come back. "Don't you love it?" my dad asked of the house after he had carried my life in 2 duffel bags up the sweeping staircase to my room. He was so happy and excited, like a kid who had done good and wanted a treat, that I couldn't let him down. He had turned helpless when my mom got sick. One day, she was healthy. The captain of both of our lives, the one who organized everything. And then suddenly she was not. The diagnosis? Stage 4 ovarian cancer. She became too weak to walk across the room, much less navigate the intricacies of the day-to-day, meals, rides, keeping us stocked in toilet paper. Sapped and exhausted, my dad lost both weight and hair, as if it were him, not her, who was having the chemo and radiation. As if he were her mirror image, or conjoined twin, one of them unable to function without the other. It had been just over 2 years, 747 days, I count them, and I couldn't help but notice that only recently had he started to put back on the weight, to look more solid. Again, finally a man, the dad, not the child. For months afterward, my dad would ask me questions that made clear he had no idea how our daily lives actually worked. Where do we keep the dustpan? What's the name of your principal? How often do you get checkups? My dad worked full-time, and when he wasn't working, he was busy negotiating with the insurance companies, dealing with the mountains of doctor's bills that kept coming and coming. So cruel after the fact. Instead of bothering him, I borrowed his tired credit card. Set up auto ship for paper towels and toilet paper, kept a grocery list, bought us granola bars and instant oatmeal in bulk. Because I hadn't yet gotten my driver's license that first year, I ordered bras online. Tampons, too. Asked the internet all the questions I would have asked my mother. A sad, virtual substitute. We made do. Both of us did. And for a while there, we were so busy holding things together, I almost forgot how things used to be. How all three of us used to be conjoined. When I was little, I'd climb into bed between my parents so we could make our daily Jesse sandwich. We were a happy unit. 3 seemed a good, balanced number. Each of us had our defined roles. My dad worked and made us laugh. My mom worked too, but part-time. And so she was point person, the family soother and the glue. My only job was to be their kid, to be their good egg, to bask in their constant stream of attention. It's been 747 days, and still I have not yet learned how to talk about any of this. I mean, I can talk about how I bought the toilet paper, how we were broken, how I was broken. But I still haven't found the words to talk about my mom. The real her. To remember who she was in a way that doesn't make me keel over. I don't know how to do that yet. Sometimes it feels like I've forgotten how to talk altogether. It's amazing, Dad, really, I said, because the new house is amazing. If I was going to be held captive by a wicked stepmother, surely there are worse places I could have ended up than living in the pages of Architectural Digest. I wasn't going to complain about its utter lack of hominess, and not even hominess specific to me, but hominess in general. Or the fact that I felt like I had moved into a museum filled with strangers. That would sound petty. Anyhow, we both knew that that wasn't the problem. The problem was that Mom wasn't here. That she would never be anywhere again. When I thought about that for too long, which I didn't, when I could help it, I realized it didn't matter much where I slept. Certain facts tend to render everything else irrelevant. We once were three strong, and now we were something altogether different. A new, unidentifiable formation. A cockeyed parallelogram. "Call me Rachel," Dad's new wife had said the first time I met her, which made me laugh. What else was I going to call her? Mother? Ms. Scott? Her maiden name. Actually not her maiden name, her previous married name. Or even more ridiculous, her new name? My mother's name? Mrs. Holmes? In my head, she remains Dad's new wife. It's a futile exercise to try to get me used to the idea. Dad's new wife. Dad's new wife. Dad's new wife. Talk about three words that don't fit together. "Call me Jessie," I said, because I didn't know what else to say. The fact that she existed at all had come as a surprise. I hadn't even realized my dad had started dating. He had been traveling a bunch, pharmaceutical conventions, he claimed, and I hadn't thought to question him, even though he had never before taken a work trip. I figured he was using work the same way I was using school, as a way to forget. I was excited to be home alone for those weekends. Did I take advantage and throw big parties where kids sipped beer from red Solo cups and left piles of vomit on our lawn? Nope. Scarlett slept over. We made microwave popcorn and binge-rewatched old seasons of our favorite shows. Then one day, my dad came home and said this whole thing about having fallen in love, and I noticed he had a new ring on his finger. Cold and shiny. Silver. A bitter metal. Apparently, somehow, instead of going to Orlando to learn more about Cialis, he had eloped to Hawaii with a woman he met on the internet in one of his bereavement support groups. At first, I thought he was joking, but his hands were shaking, and he was half smiling the way he does when he's nervous. And then came the long, terrible speech about how he knew this was going to be difficult. A new city, switching schools and all. This was the part he said fast, so fast that I made him repeat it to make sure I had heard him right. This was the part when I first heard the words, Los Angeles. A step up, he said. An opportunity. A way to get us out of our rut. Those were other words he dared to use. Our rut? I hadn't realized we were in a rut. Rut seemed way too small a word for grief. He was tan, his cheeks pink from 3 days on a beach. I was still pale from the Chicago winter. My fingers probably smelled of butter. I didn't cry. After the shock wore off, I cared a whole lot less than I thought I would. Sometimes, when Scarlett says I'm strong, I think she really means I'm numb. Rachel is one of those teeny tiny women who somehow use their voice to take up a lot of space. She doesn't speak so much as announce things, Call me Rachel. Tell Gloria if you want to add anything to the grocery list. Don't be shy. She's a whiz in the kitchen. I can't even boil an egg. Pilates kicked my ass today. I find her exhausting to be around. Today's announcement, family dinner. Until now, I've mostly avoided sitting down with everyone at the dining table. Rachel's been busy working late on a new film, an action hero slash sci-fi feature called Terrorists in Space, that she promises is going to kill it at the box office. On nights my dad's not out to business dinners with Rachel, schmoozing is key, she likes to pronounce. He's been glued to his computer, looking for a new job. Theo goes out a lot, too, mostly to Ashby's house, where they steal her mother's zone delivery meals. I tend to eat in my bedroom, usually peanut butter and jelly that I've bought myself, or ramen with an egg. I don't feel comfortable adding to Gloria's shopping list. Gloria is the house manager, whatever that is. Like family, Rachel pronounced when she introduced us for the first time. Though in my experience, family members don't wear uniforms. There also seems to be a cleaning crew and a gardener and various other Latino people who are paid to do things, like change light bulbs or fix toilets. Guys, get down here. We're all having dinner together, whether you like it or not. This last bit is said half-jokingly, like, ha-ha, isn't it funny that you two don't actually want to be doing this? Sharing a house, eating together. Life is hilarious. Maybe I hate her. I haven't decided yet. I peek out of my bedroom, see that Theo is making his way downstairs. He's wearing a huge pair of headphones. Not a bad idea. I grab my phone so I can text Scarlett while we eat. Seriously, Mom? Theo says, his ears still fully covered, so he talks even louder than usual. These people have no sense of volume control. Do we really have to play happy family? It's bad enough that they live here. I look at my dad, roll my eyes to show that I'm not bothered. He gives me a tiny smile when Rachel isn't looking. If Theo is going to be a bad sport, I'll do the opposite. Play perfect child and make Rachel even more embarrassed about her spoiled brat. Pretend I'm not angry that my dad has brought me here, that he hasn't even bothered to ask how I'm doing. I've mastered the game of pretend. Looks delicious. What is this? I ask, because it does look good. I'm getting tired of ramen and PB&J. I need some vegetables. Quinoa and a mixed seafood stir-fry with bok choy, Rachel announces. Theo, please take off your headphones and stop being rude. We have some exciting news. You're having a baby, Theo deadpans, and then laughs at his own joke, which is not at all funny. Oh no, is that even a biological possibility? How old is Rachel? Thank you, Theo, for adding one more thing to my biggest fears in life list. Very funny. No, Bill got a job today. Rachel grins as if my dad has just accomplished an amazing feat, done a triple backflip right in front of us and stuck the landing. She's still in her work clothes, a white blouse with a jaunty bow tie and black pants with a satin stripe down each side. I'm not sure why, but she always seems to wear stuff that dangles. Ties, tassels, charms, scarves. Her blunt-cut brown hair is blown straight, and its perfection ages her, despite her tasteful Botox. Too many sharp lines. I'll grant her this, even though I'm not much in the mood to grant her anything. Rachel's enthusiasm is generous. My dad's salary is probably only a little bit more than what she pays Gloria. Still, I'm relieved. I can now ask for an allowance to hold me over until I get my own part-time job. Let's toast, she says, and to my surprise, pours both Theo and me each a small glass of wine. My dad doesn't say anything, and neither do I. We can play sophisticated and European. to new beginnings. I clink my glass, sip my wine, and then dig into my stir-fry. I try not to make eye contact with Theo. Instead, I text Scarlett under the table. I'm so excited. Didn't take long, darling. Rachel smiles at Dad, squeezes his hand. He smiles back. I look at my phone. I haven't gotten used to seeing them together, acting all newlywed-y. Touching. I doubt I'll ever get used to it. Where will you be working? I ask, mostly because I hope my talking will make Rachel take her hand away from Dad's. It doesn't work.
Right down the street from your school. I'll eventually run the pharmacy counter at Ralph's, my dad says.
I wonder how he feels about Rachel making multiples of what he makes, whether it's emasculating or attractive. When I objected to her paying for my school, my dad just said,
"Don't be ridiculous. This is not up for negotiation."
He was serious. None of it was up for negotiation. His marriage, us moving, Wood Valley. Before my mom died, I lived in a democracy. Now, it's a dictatorship.
"Wait, what?"
Theo asks, and finally takes off his headphones.
"You are not working at Ralph's."
My dad looks up, confused by Theo's belligerent tone.
"Yeah, the one on Ventura,"
my dad says, keeping his own voice conversational. Light. He's not used to belligerence. He's used to me. Passive-aggressive. Actually, mostly passive, with the occasional storm of snappiness. When I rage, it is alone, in my room, sometimes set rhythmically to music.
"Good benefits, dental. I'll be a pharmacy intern for a while, since I need to take an exam to practice in California. So I'll be studying for my CPJE while you guys study for your PSAT. But, you know, it's paid. Not like an internship. I'll be doing the same thing I did back in Chicago while I get certified."
My dad stutters a nervous laugh and wears that half-smile. He's babbling.
"You got a job at the supermarket near my school?"
Theo yells.
"At the pharmacy counter. I'm a pharmacist. You know this, right?" "He knows this," my dad asks Rachel, now completely bewildered. "I'm not bagging groceries."
"You have got to be kidding me. Mom, are you serious?"
"Theo, slow your roll," Rachel says, and puts her hand out.
"Who are these people?" I think, not for the first time. "Slow your roll?
As if I'm not humiliated enough. Now my friends are going to see him working at the supermarket with one of those lame little plastic name tags?"
Theo throws his fork across the room and stands up. I can't help but notice the splash of soy sauce on the white dining room chair and resist the urge to find some shout. Or is that Gloria's job?
"Give me a break. It's hard enough without this shit."
Theo storms off, all ridiculous stomp and huff, like a 4-year-old. It's so overblown that I'm tempted to laugh. Did he learn to throw fits like that in theater class? Then I see my dad's face. His eyes are sad and hollow. Humiliated.
"Language,"
Rachel says, even though Theo is long gone now. And also 16. When I was little, I used to love to play pharmacist. I'd dress up in one of my mom's aprons and use the empty bottles my dad brought home to dispense Cheerios to my stuffed animals. Until my mother died, it never occurred to me to be anything but proud of my dad. And even then, my doubts were only about his survival skills, not his professional ones. I actually liked the idea of him behind the counter at Ralph's, just down the road from school. I miss him. This house gives us too many rooms to hide in. Screw Theo and his rich friends. We didn't have dental in Chicago. My father is an optimist. I doubt he realized it would be this hard. Or maybe, when it was just the two of us flattened in our wrestler's house, he thought,
There's no way California could be any harder than this.
I can't not take the job because he's embarrassed.
My dad says it like he's asking Rachel a question. And again, I find I have to look away. But this time, it's not to spare me, but to spare him.
I need to work.
Later, I sit outside on one of Rachel's many decks, stare at the hills, which cocoon the house with their fairy lights. Imagine the other families out there, finishing up their dinners or soaking their dishes. If they're fighting, their fights are likely familiar. Old habits rubbing each other raw in spots already grooved. In this house, we are strangers. Nothing like a family at all. Weird, too, to think about how things used to be here before my dad and I arrived. Before Theo's dad died. Did they all sit down to dinner together? Like my family did? I have my phone with me, but I'm too tired to text Scarlett. Too tired even to see if I have another email from SN. Who cares? He's probably just another entitled little shit, like everyone else at Wood Valley. He's already admitted as much. The screen door opens and closes behind me, but I don't turn to look. Theo plops down into the lounge chair next to mine and takes out a set of rolling papers and a bag of weed.
I'm not an asshole, you know,
Theo says, and begins to roll his joint with tender precision, fat and straight. Elegant work. Honestly, you have given me no evidence to the contrary, I say, and then regret it immediately. Couldn't I have just said, yes? Yes, you are. Or, leave me alone. Why do I sometimes talk like a 60-year-old? Won't your mom see you?
100% sanctioned, legal, and medicinal. Got a prescription from my shrink.
Seriously? I ask.
No joke. It's for my anxiety.
I can hear the smile in his voice, and I find myself smiling back. Only in California, I think. He holds the joint out toward me, but I shake my head. My dad has had enough trauma for one day. He doesn't need to see his goody-two-shoes daughter smoking up with his new stepson. For a pharmacist, he's surprisingly conservative about pharmaceuticals.
Anyhow, I think she'd be relieved it's just a joint. A kid from school died last year. Heroin OD.
That's awful, I say. There was a ton of drug use at my old school. Doubt the stuff they take here is any harder, probably just more expensive. I wonder what his prescription was for. Theo shoots me a look. It takes him a moment to realize I'm kidding. I tend to make jokes at inappropriate times, go darker than I probably should. He might as well learn that about me now.
You know, in any other situation, I could see us being friends. You're not that bad. I mean, Ashby could have a field day giving you a makeover, but you already have the raw material, and I can tell you're kind of cool in your own way. Funny.
Theo looks straight ahead, delivers his backhanded compliments to the hills.
Your dad sucks, though.
And you are kind of an asshole, I say. For real. Theo laughs, shudders at some invisible wind. It cools down at night here, but it's still too hot for the scarf he has knotted around his neck. He takes a hit, long and hard. I've never smoked pot, but I can see the appeal. I can feel him unwinding next to me, sinking deeper into the chair. The glass of wine has loosened me, too. I wish Rachel had offered me a second. That's a gift I wouldn't have refused.
Yeah, I know. But do you have any idea how much shit I'm going to take at school because of him? Jesus Christ.
I don't feel sorry for you.
No, you probably shouldn't.
This sucks for me, too. All of it. Every single minute of every single day, I say. And once it's out, I realize just how true it is. Dad, you were wrong. It could be worse. It is so much worse. I had a life back in Chicago. Friends. People who would actually say hello to me in the halls. My dad died of lung cancer, Theo says, apropos of nothing, and takes another long hit. That's why I smoke. Figure if you can run 12 miles a day and get cancer anyway, I might as well live it up. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I know, right?
Theo puts out the joint, carefully saves what's left for later. He stands up and looks me straight in the eye, no trace of his temper tantrum left.
Hey, for what it's worth, I'm really sorry about your mom.
Thanks, I say. Sorry about your dad.
Thanks, I guess. By the way, can you please start eating the food in the kitchen? Gloria keeps bugging me about you. She said all that ramen is going to make you guapo.
The ramen is going to make me handsome?
Gordo, gorda, whatever. It's going to turn you into a big, fat, fatty, fat, fatty.
All right, my community service is done for the day. Wow, still an asshole, I say. But this time, I let my smile seep into my voice. Theo is actually not that bad either. Not great, but not that bad.
So I'm probably still not going to talk to you at school, he says, and for one fleeting second, I wonder if he could be SN.
I figured as much, I say, and he gives me one quick guy nod before turning his back on me to go inside.
Chapter 6 To Somebody Nobody, from Jesse A. Holmes. Subject: I'm out of clever titles. Ever feel like your life is one long nightmare, and you just keep hoping you wake up, but you never do? To Jesse A. Holmes, from Somebody Nobody. Subject: Sleeping Beauty. Yeah, things that bad? To Somebody Nobody, from Jesse A. Holmes. Subject: More like drama queen. No, not really. Sorry. Just feeling a bit self-pitying tonight. Never should have written. To Jesse A. Holmes. From Somebody Nobody. Subject: My fortune cookie advice. Nah, no need to apologize. You know, they say how happy you are in high school is indirectly proportional to how successful you will be in life. To Somebody Nobody. From Jesse A. Holmes. Subject: In bed. Yeah? Well, then yay for me, because that means I'm going to be CEO of the whole effin' world. To Jesse A. Holmes. From Somebody Nobody. Subject: Re in bed. Nope, I will. It's midnight now. I lie in bed and listen to the unfamiliar noises outside. California even sounds different. Apparently, there are coyotes in these hills, plus wildfires and mudslides to worry about. This place is always on the verge of an apocalypse. I can't just lie here and wait for sleep or tomorrow to come, whichever happens first. My brain is spinning out. A cup of tea. That's what I need. Something warm and comforting. Chamomile has the same flavor in Chicago or L.A. So I pull off the covers and put on my bunny slippers, the ones my mom gave me for my 13th birthday. Even though the bunnies are kind of creepy now that they're each missing one eye. And I head downstairs, taking each step carefully so as not to wake anyone. In the dark, the kitchen feels far away. I need to cross the long living room to get there, and I'm scared of knocking something over. I walk slowly, arms outstretched, and that's how I'm standing when I first see them.
like a cartoon sleepwalker.
My dad and Rachel sit close together on the couch in the den off to the side, a single reading light turned on above them. They can't see me, thank God, because I'm now hiding behind a pillar. I feel embarrassed stumbling upon them like this, and a little stunned, too, since I can see that they are not merely strangers who decided on a lark to elope. They look like a real married couple. This is intimate, and not in the way it was at dinner when Rachel put her hand on my dad's, a gesture that, on reflection, seemed more for Theo's and my benefit. Now, they are bent together, forehead to forehead, and there's a photo album I've never seen before open on their laps. Must be Rachel's. Is she showing my dad her before pictures? Her dead husband? Pictorial evidence that this house used to be filled with a functional family? I can't hear what Rachel is saying, but there's something about the hunch of her shoulders and the way my dad reaches up and touches her face. Cups it between his palms like it's something precious and easily shattered. That tells me she's crying. He might be too. My heart pounds, and I feel sick to my stomach. I imagine the photos on her lap. Maybe there's one of Theo, age 5, being swung in the air between his parents. We have that picture in our before album. My mom on the right, my dad on the left, me in the middle, caught right at magic liftoff. I am smiling so big you can see that I'm missing a tooth. Did my dad show Rachel our pictures? Hand over everything, our entire history, just like that. My eyes fill with tears, though I fight them. I'm not sure why I feel like crying. Suddenly, everything feels irrevocably broken, in that way it can in the middle of night, when you are alone. In that way it can when you are watching your father comfort his new wife. In that way it can when you too are hurting. But there's no one there to comfort you. I walked backward, a silent moonwalk, a trip that feels so much longer going back than it did coming. I pray that they don't see me, pray that I can get away before they start kissing. I cannot watch them kiss. When I finally get to the stairs, I force myself to go up slowly and noiselessly, one at a time. I force myself not to run away as fast as my creepy bunny slippers will take me. Chapter 7 Day 15. Better and worse. And maybe better. Sun still shines with relentless aim and glare. My classmates are still fancy pants, and the girls still somehow look more mature than me, more confident. As if 16 years adds up to more out west than it does where I come from. The humiliation begins early, in class. Good, I think. Bring it on. Let's get this over with. Maybe I am my dad's daughter after all. An optimist. The gap is so plebe, don't you think? Jem asks her wonder twin, of course, in reference to my genes, though I have no idea what she means. Plebe, short for plebeian? As in my pants are those of the common folk? Well, yes. Yes, they are. As are my Costco undies, which I'm tempted to pull down so she can kiss my ass. The anger sharpens my wits, makes me want to advance rather than retreat. I will not engage with these girls. I'm not strong enough for that. But I will turn to Adriana, who is sitting next to me, because screw it, no time like the present to make an ally. I ignore my burning face, refuse to turn to see if the Batman overheard anything, and pretend I don't notice that anyone was talking about me. I like your glasses, I say, just a tad above a whisper. Adriana blinks a few times, as if deciding about me,
and then smiles.
Thanks. I ordered them online, so I was a little nervous.
There is something about her tone, quiet, like mine, that's inviting. Not overly loud, not that teenage girl voice that everyone else seems to use to demand notice. She has brown hair tied back in a bun that looks purposely messy, big charcoal-lined brown eyes, and bright red lipstick lips. Pretty in the aggregate, the sum somehow adding up to much more than each individual part.
You really like them?
Yeah, they're Warby Parker, right? They make neat stuff. I hear Jem and Crystal giggle in front of me, maybe because I use the word neat.
Whatever.
Yep, she smiles and gives me an ignore-them look. Bitches, she mouths. I smile and mouth back. I know. After class, I gather the courage to tell the Batman that we're going to have to departner, that I'm not willing to risk breaking Wood Valley's honor code just because he doesn't know how to play well with others. I am feeling brave today, empowered by having introduced myself to Adriana and by not cowering before the blonde bimbo squad. Or maybe it's that for the first time since I moved to L.A., I ate something other than peanut butter on toast for breakfast. Regardless, I will be immune to the Batman's cute boy voodoo. Not my type, I tell myself just before I march up to his usual spot by the coffee cart. Not my type, I tell myself when I see him in all his black and blue glory, as tender as a bruise. Not my type for real. I tell myself when it turns out I have to wait in line behind a group of girls who are traveling five strong, like lionesses, one the obvious leader, the rest her similarly dressed minions. All the type to skin you alive and suck on your bones.
E, tell me you're coming on Saturday, the leader, a girl named Heather, says, not at all dismayed by the Batman's dismissive hug or the fact that he keeps glancing down at his book. Not Sartre today. Dracula, actually, which is both awesome and seasonally appropriate reading, considering we are nearing Halloween. Not my type, not my type, not my type.
Maybe, he says. You know how it is.
Generic words arranged in such a way as to say absolutely nothing. Impressive in their nothingness. I'm not sure I could say less in as many words, even if I tried.
For sure, Ethan, one of the other girls says. Her name is Rain or Storm.
Maybe Sky. Definitely something meteorologically related.
So, like, yeah, we'll see you then.
Yeah, he says, and this time he just gives up the act completely. Starts reading right in front of them, his energy sapped.
Okay, well, bye.
Heather smiles her best smile. Perfect teeth, of course, since L.A. is the land of the porcelain veneer. I googled veneers last night and found out they cost at least $1,000 a tooth, which means her mouth cost five times more than my car.
Bye.
The other girls say, and finally walk away. The Batman looks relieved that they're gone.
Can I help you?
He asks, like I'm the next customer at a drive-thru. I remember our English project, and how he just assumed I could be railroaded like everyone else. So, the wasteland, I say, and tuck my hands into my back pockets, trying to look casual. If you don't want to work together, that's fine, but then I need to tell Mrs. Pollock and find another partner. I'm not just going to let you do the work. There. I said it. That wasn't so hard. I breathe out. I feel lightheaded and shaky, but nothing that can be seen from the outside. I hope. My mask firmly still in place.
Now I wish he could just hand me my Happy Meal and end this thing.
What's the problem? I told you I'll get an A,
he says and leans farther back. He owns that chair even more than I own my lunch bench. He stares at me again. His blue eyes look almost gray today. A Chicago winter sky. Why does he always look so tired? Even his hair looks tired, the way it sticks up in random little peaks and then folds down, as if bowing in defeat. That's not the point. I can get an A on my own. I don't need to hand in your work, I say, and cross my arms. And anyway, it's against the honor code. He looks at me again, and I see the faintest hint of a smirk. Better than a dismissal, I guess, but still obnoxious.
The honor code?
Screw him. He's probably the son of some famous actor or director, and he doesn't have to worry about his place here, or getting into college. He's probably never even heard the word scholarship before. Would have to look it up. Listen, I'm new here, okay? And I don't want to get kicked out or in trouble or whatever. And it's junior year, so it all counts. So I don't really care if you think that's dorky or stupid or whatever.
Or whatever,
the Batman says. Another inscrutable smirk. I hate him. I really do. At least when Jem and Crystal make fun of me, it's for things that I can tell myself don't matter. My clothes. Not my words. I hear my mom in my head for just a second, since her voice has mostly evaporated. Water to air. Or maybe disintegrated. Dirt to dust. But for one easy second, she's right here with me. Other people can't make you feel stupid. Only you can. Or whatever, I say again, like I'm in on the joke. Like he can't hurt me. I bite back the sudden tears. Where did they come from? No, not now. No way. I take a breath, and it passes. Seriously, I'll just find another partner. Not a big deal. I force myself to look him in the eye, shrug like I don't give a shit, make it sound like I too have people lining up to talk to me like the lionesses do for him. The Batman looks right back at me, shakes his head a little as if trying to wake up. And then he smiles. Not a smirk. Nothing mean or cruel about it. Just a good old-fashioned smile. He doesn't have porcelain veneers. He does have a cleft. His two front teeth are slightly crooked, veer just a tiny bit to the right, as if they've decided perfection is overrated. I don't think he wears eyeliner. I think he was just born like that, his features enunciating.
Okay, let's do it, he says.
Excuse me? I am distracted because his smile transforms his face. He turns from beautiful, moody teenager to a goofy, slightly awkward one in an instant. I can almost see him at 13, vulnerable, shy, not the same person who holds court at the coffee cart. I bet I would have liked him better then, when he read Marvel comics instead of Sartre, when he didn't wrangle with all the hard questions and come out the other end sad or angry or tired or whatever it is he is. I definitely like him better smiling.
Let's tackle the wasteland together. April is the cruelest month and all that jazz. Not my favorite poem, but it's seminal, he says,
and puts his bookmark in Dracula and closes it, like that's that. Decision made. Here are your chicken McNuggets with extra honey mustard. Please, thank you, you're welcome. Okay, I say, because reading him makes me slow. I'm the tired one now. His smile is like unlocking a riddle. How does an imperfection make him seem even more perfect? And did he just use the word seminal? Is he sad or angry or just 16?
Do we really have an honor code here?
He asks. We do. It's 10 pages long.
Learn something new every day. We haven't officially met yet, have we? I'm Ethan. Ethan Marks.
Jesse, I say, and we shake hands like real adults. No fist bumps or faux cheek kisses or guy nods. His fingers are long and slender and solid. I like them as much as his smile. Like touching them even more. Holmes.
Nice to finally meet you, Jesse. He pauses. Holmes.
Day 15. Definitely better. Later in gym, I walk the track with Dree. She says that's what her friends call her, because Adriana has too many reality show connotations. And we laugh as we count the number of times Mr. Shackleman tries to surreptitiously adjust his balls. It's Dree's game. SN is right. She's funny. I can't decide if he's itchy or trying to hide his boner from watching the Axis of Evil run, she says. Jem and Crystal have lapped us 3 times now, not breaking a sweat, not even breathing hard. They look so good. I can't help but watch them, too. Mr. Shackleman doesn't look much older than the high school boys, except he already has a beer gut and a small bald patch on the back of his head. He wears gym shorts and blows a shrill plastic whistle more than necessary. Are they twins? I ask about Jem and Crystal. No, Dree laughs, but they've been best friends since, like, forever. Have they always been so, you know, bitchy? I hate the word bitch. I do. Using the B word makes me feel like a bad feminist. But sometimes, there is no other word. Not really. You know how it is. Mean girls get mean in 7th grade, and they stay that way until your 10-year reunion, when they want to be best friends again. At least, that's what my mom says. It's funny how high school is high school everywhere, I say and smile at Dree. Try not to feel uncomfortable at the mention of moms, like it didn't set off an invisible flare in my chest. I mean, this place is completely different than where I come from, but in some ways, it's exactly the same. You can't escape it. College. So close and yet so far away, Dree says. She's nothing like Scarlett, who is brash and unafraid of anything or anyone, contrary to what she claims. She's the brave one of our duo. And yet, I have a feeling Scar would like Dree, would guide her along, like Scar has done for me all these years. A friend told me recently that how happy you are in high school is indirectly proportional to how successful you'll be later in life. I say, testing the theory that maybe SN is Adriana, which I'd definitely take over SN being Theo. Maybe she was just too shy to reach out on her own. I study her face, but there isn't even a twitch of recognition. Nope, not her. I don't know. Hope so. She reaches into her pocket and pulls out an inhaler. Sorry, I'm allergic to the outdoors. And the indoors. And everything else. I know it makes me look like a tool, but not breathing looks worse. Once we are better friends, I should tell her she has nothing to be sorry for. No self-deprecating qualifier necessary. And then I laugh to myself, because even though she is 2,000 miles away, Scar is right here too. Because that's exactly the kind of thing she would say to me. Chapter 8. Theo is wearing jeans that are so tight it looks like they are thigh tattoos and a sleeveless leather vest. I'm pretty sure he approaches getting dressed as an act in costuming. Today, he's a buff and surprisingly hot Hell's Angel.
Look at you checking out my guns, he says and opens the fridge.
He takes out 2 fancy-pressed juices and throws me one.
Here, this will keep you from getting rickets.
I'm perched on one of the kitchen stools, reading. This enormous house tricked me once again. I thought I was home alone. Had I known Theo was here, I wouldn't have left my room with my exfoliating clay mask on. Not my best look, costume or otherwise. What the hell is this? I take a swig of juice, which is green and cloudy, and it turns out revolting. I fight my gag reflex.
Kale, ginger, cucumber, and beet juice. Probably should have started you with one more fruit-heavy. Forgot you aren't an advanced juicer.
An advanced juicer? Really? You know that sometimes talking to you is like watching a reality show, I say. It's amusing only because it can't possibly be real.
This is all real, baby.
Theo again flashes his impressive muscles. Not too shabby, I say, referring to his arms. I dig the biker look.
Biker? I was going for rocker.
That too.
But healthy, muscular rocker. Not strung-out skinny rocker, right?
Definitely the former. Theo looks relieved. And for the first time, I see that maybe he isn't all confidence all the time. Now that I know what to expect, I take another sip of my juice. There is something oddly virtuous about its grossness. I can't decide if I love it or hate it, which, it turns out, is exactly how I feel about Theo.
Are you going to Heather's party tonight? It's going to be insane. Her dad and his new girlfriend are in Thailand, and he has this huge mansion in the hills. They have Mad Bank.
Wait, SN used the expression Mad Bank recently. Doesn't mean anything, I tell myself. Those words are common enough, right? I look at Theo, point to my mask. What do you think?
Oh, no. Please don't make me have to take pity on you and take you with me,
Theo says. What a lovely invitation. But no thanks. I have homework to do.
Don't believe you. It's Saturday night.
I have nothing to wear.
That I believe. But I bet we could rustle something up.
Seriously, appreciate the pity and all that, but maybe next time.
Your loss, he says and jumps off his stool and attempts to fist bump me. Don't smoke all my weed while I'm gone.
To Somebody Nobody. From Jesse A. Holmes. Subject, Saturday night.
Are you at Heather's party?
To Jesse A. Holmes. From Somebody Nobody. Subject. Almost Sunday morning, actually.
Maybe. Are you?
To Somebody Nobody. From Jesse A. Holmes. Subject? Not really. T-2 hours. If you were there, wouldn't you know whether I was too? To Jesse A. Holmes. From Somebody Nobody. Subject? Fine. You win. Saturday night. Don't get all sly on me. Heather's parties are huge. To Somebody Nobody. From Jesse A. Holmes. Subject. You gave up so easily. You're the one who likes to be all sly. To Jesse A. Holmes. From Somebody Nobody. Subject. I like that you can have... ...
Does this count as our first fight?
Winky face. To Somebody Nobody. From Jesse A. Holmes. Subject. ? OMG, did you just emoji me? To Jesse A. Holmes. From Somebody Nobody. Subject. ... Two conversations at once. Technically, it was an emoticon, and you countered with an OMG, so I'm pretty sure we're even. Not to get all early zero zeros on you, but shall we IM? This refreshing my email every 2 seconds is annoying, though I will miss your subject lines. Me. Done. SN. Ah, this is so much better. Me. Right? Right. Though, not to get too crazy futuristic on you, but we could text. That's how normal people communicate. SN. And give up my anonymity? No thanks. So Saturday night?
or almost Sunday morning. Whatever. At the party or no?
Me.
No. You?
SN.
I was. Not anymore. Now just sitting in my car, thumb-talking with you. Wait, did that sound dirty? Not my intention. Unless you liked it.
Me. I'm just going to ignore you.
SN. Please do. This whole anonymous thing makes me a little silly.
Me. The anonymous thing is silly.
SN. Is it? I'm not so sure. Irregardless, that's how it goes.
Me. Irregardless is not a word.
SN. Smarty pants. I stand corrected. Actually, I sit corrected.
Me. You are a dork, and I mean that in the best way possible.
SN. Things any better on your end? You were all in the bell jar earlier in the week. I was worried.
Me. Definitely better. Thanks for checking. How about you? Things good?
SN. Yeah, fine, I guess. Not having the best year.
Me. Know how that goes.
SN. Do you? Hope you really don't, but suspect you do. You have sad eyes.
Me. I do? And when have you seen my eyes?
SN. I haven't. Not really. And I mean more your brow. You have a sad brow.
Me. I have no idea what to do with that information.
Botox? SN. And the Chicago girl goes LA. But nope.
I stop writing. Feel my brow with my hands. I do have a tendency to knit my eyebrows. Have always done it. My mom used to warn me that I was going to get a permanent wrinkle if I kept it up, just like she had. But hers was an exclamation point right in the middle of her forehead. It exuded enthusiasm, maybe even joy, not worry. Do I look sad all the time? I hope not. I don't want to be the sad girl. That's not who I am. Actually, that's not true. This is truer. That's not how I want to be known.
SN. You still there? Something I said? For the record, I like your brow just the way it is.
Me. Just thinking. Sorry.
SN. Don't do that. You might hurt yourself.
Me. So tell me about the party. Hashtag vicarious partygoer.
SN. Meh. It was a typical high school party, except it had some famous DJ I've never heard of, and Heather's dad has a cool house, and everyone was pretty wasted.
Me. You?
SN. Nah, I'm driving. Didn't feel like Ubering it. Anyhow, knew I didn't want to stay too long.
Me. Just made your appearance?
SN. I don't know. I just find it all so stupid or boring or something.
Me. I know what you mean. In Chicago, it was the same thing. But, you know, instead of a super fancy house and famous DJ, it was the bowling alley. But yeah, still.
SN. Stupid and boring. But that's not it exactly. I mean small. It all feels small and unimportant.
Me. And yet vitally important to everyone else. And, dare I say it? Maybe even a tiny bit important to you, which is even more embarrassing in its own way. Am I making sense?
SN. Totally. FWIW? This feels important. Talking to you.
Me. Yeah?
SN. Yeah.
Chapter 9. Before my mom died, Scarlett and I used to talk about the concept of the perfect day. What would have to happen, from the moment we woke up to the moment we went to sleep, to make that day better than all the others before it. We didn't dream big, at least I didn't. My focus was mostly on the absence of things. I wanted a day during which I didn't stub my toe or spill on my shirt, or feel shy or awkward or unattractive. I wouldn't miss the bus,
or forget a change of clothes for gym. When I looked in the mirror after lunch, there wouldn't be food in my teeth or something in my nose. Sure, it wasn't all omissions. I'd sprinkle in a first kiss,